This is Natasha Spoiler Hour, covering Scandal, Season 2, Episode 17, Snake in the Garden. In this episode, it turns out that Hollis Doyle sometimes knows what the fuck he's talking about, and maybe everybody should listen. Welcome to Natasha's Spoiler Hour. Hey guys, so I'm pretty excited about this episode. I liked it a lot. I have to say that I was a little, I wasn't sure how, when I start out with especially this show, because there is inevitably a twist at the end, I often try and figure out the twist right away, which is an unfortunate habit. It's kind of like, I don't know if any of you watched The IT Crowd, but somebody lets a character on that know that there's a twist in the movie, and causes him to spend the entire movie naming all of the different twists that it could be and basically just ruins the whole experience for him. So I feel like that can happen with me sometimes, and while I do think that's part of the fun of the show, it can ruin it a teeny tiny bit. But I really liked this one because there wasn't a twist. There was, but it was the, you know, what was being posed from the start, which is kind of great. I really liked this episode because of that, and because there's some real forward movement on a couple of character things, and I'm interested to see how those pan out. And overall, I just thought that this was a really interesting handling of some of the different people that we have seen, and some that we haven't seen in a while, like Hollis Doyle, who just last week I was thinking, Jesus, what happened to him? He didn't get killed, did he? I don't remember that, so whatever happened to him? And I haven't seen him haunting the White House like he had been, but I figured that if he hadn't been killed and nothing had been said about him, then business as usual couldn't have changed that much. But I didn't see that. It was just sort of left hanging. So it was kind of cool to have him brought back in this capacity as a client here. So I'm going to, because this was like much more of a character centric episode to me, I'm going to go by character a little bit more than scene by scene like I've done in the past. And I would also ask for you guys to please bear with me because I've had a glass and a half of wine and I'm feeling really good, but sometimes this doesn't make for the best performance. Sometimes it makes for better performance. So, you know, open minds and all that, drinking some, Sauvignon Blanc. So this episode is called Snake in the Garden, and I found that to be fun because there's definitely a feeling of betrayal throughout. I mean, that's what the show is really about, isn't it? Things aren't a scandal if you don't feel betrayed. But there's the scandal of Hollis's daughter just being the worst. There's Jake, who we still don't know what the fuck Jake's deal is or who he's really working for. There's Cyrus and Melly, who are in the inner circle, but kind of not, and manipulating and whatever. There's the whole thing with Huck and Quinn, and I'm so wondering what the hell they're doing with that. I feel like it can't possibly be going somewhere good. Just because of the nature of the show and the fact that, if I'm not mistaken, it looks like Huck is kind of starting to develop feelings for her. Like, the way he's looking at her and the way he's, like, taking her under his wing and showing her the family that he's chosen to watch now feels like kind of a big step for him. Like, he didn't share that with anybody before except Becky. So now that he's sharing it with Quinn, it seems like kind of a red flag. And I'm just, like, really kind of scared about what that means. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with what's going on with Cyrus. Now, Melly goes to Cyrus last episode with the information about Jake and tells him, Fitz isn't cheating on me, he's cheating on you. And I understood what she meant by that, in that obviously Cyrus was kind of the one that Fitz went to for military information and advice and all of that. But because of Jake's working kind of under the radar and being someone that not everyone knows, and just in general, he seems to have a different level of access than Cyrus does. It's not necessarily as high a level, but because of the fact that he's not as well known, he might be able to make more inroads. I mean, you know, he's not known to Olivia, and Olivia seems to know everyone. So right there, you see that he has the potential to be used in a very, very different way than Cyrus is. But when he sits down with Fitz and tells him, you know, talks to him about the source that he has. It's interesting that Fitz immediately is like, we'll try and get you a more permanent position in this administration if things work out. Because while I understand, first of all, Fitz wanting to do that just for the sake of having somebody useful that he can trust, but also because it's, a, you know, he's a good tool, I feel like it's sort of shooting yourself in the foot. Somebody like Jake is useful because of the fact that they're low profile, and then putting him in a position of, in the White House seems like it's sort of negating half of what's really good and useful about him. So I'm interested to see what direction that goes in. And Cyrus has decided that he is going to go ahead and meet with Charlie, our friendly neighborhood hitman, and have him follow this guy around, follow Jake around. I loved the fact that Charlie immediately is like, so is he sleeping with your husband? And Cyrus says, in a manner, yes. Oh, that's so adorable, because it really is kind of in a manner, isn't it? And also the fact that they meet down in this like dark parking garage where they always seem to go. There's something about the two of them meeting down there that feels like kind of cartoony to me. It's sort of adorable, and I don't know if it's really necessary or not. I mean, it very well may be. Cyrus seems to know his shit. But it does seem like sort of Hollywood and kind of cute. And I also really loved the fact that in this confrontation that Cyrus has with Melly, he basically tells her, thank you for reminding me that in all things Melly, I should keep my guard up and to never trust you ever, ever, ever. Oh, Cyrus, I know she's the worst, but she's also kind of fantastic. And she has one of the best scenes in this whole series so far, I thought, at the end of this episode. So then we go to the Hollis thing. We are watching Hollis and his daughter on this tape asking for money from the kidnapper. Now, I have to give this actress credit. I cannot remember what she is from, but I remember her playing like the little sister or something and being kind of annoying in some other television show, and I'm racking my brain, but you know what? She's the daughter in Desperate Housewives. That's what I'm thinking of. But she is, in my opinion, acting really badly here, and when he starts applauding at the end of that tape, I started cracking up because I was so glad that somebody else was like, what a load of garbage. She's talking to somebody conveniently off camera that you can't hear at all, and, you know, telling her father, listen to him, please do what he says, blah, blah, blah. And her lines that she's using aren't even any good. And the fact that there's nothing in this video to indicate there's anyone else in the room, the whole thing, just to me, I was immediately like, oh, this is such complete and utter shit. And because of the way that she plays it, it's obvious that as the actress, she's really good because she manages to play this desperation, but does it as if she's faking it, which is like, I mean, that's layer upon layer. That's really hard. But I figured since there's a twist, it can't be as simple as that. I figured that the daughter was faking, but that the ex-wife was in on it. So I wrote to Nina Perez on Facebook Messenger, and I was just like, hey, I'm just going to say this right now before the big reveal that I think the ex-wife is in on it, because I just wanted to like go on record. But it turns out I was totally wrong. It really was just as simple as that she was faking, because I didn't buy this shit for a second. Even when they get the ear in the mail, that didn't do anything to convince me. You can get an ear off a corpse. You can get an ear. I mean, when they show the shot of like where her ear was supposed to be, I don't know if it's just that the makeup department didn't do that good a job, or if that they were trying to, because in the actual show, she's supposed to have actually cut off her ear herself. But if you look at the shot where they show the spot where her ear is supposed to have been, you can clearly see that her ear has been taped down and they've put like this kind of bloody layer over it. But you can see the outline of where her ear is. So I didn't think that was the makeup department doing a shitty job, which apparently they just did a shitty job. I thought that it was, oh, she faked cutting off her own ear and taped her ear down and did all this makeup and sent the photo of that and then got an ear from, you know, you can go to a morgue. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but she was part of a really wealthy family, and I didn't put it past her to have connections to do whatever, especially because she was involved in a sketchy relationship where she might have somebody who can you know, do whatever they need to do to make this happen. $20 million is quite a bit of motivation. So I just really, really loved this whole storyline. And I loved the fact that Hollis called it out on the first, like, immediately. And his ex-wife getting so pissed, you sat on this for 12 hours and didn't tell anybody. And him being utterly unconcerned. He genuinely, it's not even like him bravado or, you know, doing something to try and, like, fake out the kidnapper. And he genuinely is like, are you kidding me? This is pathetic. She's tried to fleece me a million times. I know when I'm being fucking conned. And the transformation when he sees the picture of his daughter missing the ear was just a really great moment to me of not only acting, but the way that they decided to play his character. It was a very understated moment. And I just thought that at the end, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, when it turns out that she was the one behind the whole thing, he says to his wife, or he says to his daughter, me and your mama, she can't go through this again. And he's like, obviously, he's talking about himself, but he can't bring himself to admit how upset he is. So he just puts it all onto his ex-wife. But the whole Hollis thing and him being part of the story abruptly again, while I really like him being back, because he is just such a weird character in that I almost admire him, because even though he's awful in a lot of ways and he really does know how to hang shit over people's heads, he's at least honest about it. Whereas I feel like somebody like Olivia and even Cyrus, to a degree, they can pretend that they're on the side of good all the time, but a lot of the time they're on the side of what's best for them. I mean, that's just human nature. And Hollis is at least honest that that's exactly what he's doing all the time. He doesn't try and sugarcoat things or paint them as if it's, oh, I'm an altruistic trying to, you know, do what's best for the nation type of thing. And I have a huge problem with Cyrus's fucking little chat with Fitz later on because of that. So I actually really, like, as much as Hollis pisses me off because he's just super unscrupulous, the fact that he's straightforward about that, in a way, I kind of respect that. And so he walks in, and when Quinn sees him, the look on her face, like, she just wants to run over there and strangle him, genuinely. And he asks her for a cup of coffee with two sugars in it to make it as sweet as you. Oh my God, what it must be like to be sexually harassed / patronized / condescended to by the guy who arranged to have your ex-boyfriend killed. I don't even know. And she manages to swallow it, because I kind of thought this was definitely going to set things off, because Quinn hasn't been the most circumspect in the past. And I feel like it's a mark of her progress as a character, her self-control and her ability to do the putting on my gladiator suit thing that she talks about later with Harrison. She's progressing a little bit. And while I don't really give a shit that she's progressing because I hate her, I appreciate the effort on the side of the, on the behalf of the writers. I understand what you're trying to do, and I'm not going to pick too many bones about it. It's just not working for me because I just hate her. And it's pretty hard once you go an entire season and a half making somebody, not even somebody that you dislike, but just making them boring and irrelevant, to try and suddenly make them seem relevant and for that to actually fly. I can deal with a character that I don't like suddenly becoming more of a good guy much more easily than I can deal with a character that I don't understand why they're there suddenly being put in a position where it feels like they're trying to force this actual function on me. And I feel like that's what's happening here. And I said this last episode, I am okay. I think it's smart what they're doing, but I do think they took a little too fucking long to do it. I feel like it would have gone a long way last season towards making me feel like this all made sense now if they had actually had her interested in what Huck was doing and sort of teaming up with him sooner. And while I understand that Huck was keeping the secret from her and maybe didn't feel like he could tell her the truth the whole time, I do get that. But there was still an element of it, I feel like, that could have been included. And rather than actually thinking through what her function was on the show, they just had her be there for this, you know, whole Lindsay Dwyer thing. And then once they were like, wait, what do we do with her now? They just threw ahead this, oh, 6 months later or 9 months later or however much it was, with her being involved with Huck. And it felt like, an afterthought. And I guess that's the part that I really have the problem with. But I'm going on and on about that, so I'm going to go ahead and continue talking about Hollis. This whole thing with his daughter, it's really interesting because they have her being this, you know, first of all, she's on all kinds of drugs. She's got this sketchy boyfriend. She's just in general really privileged and spoiled. And I loved the scene where Abby and Harrison are in her apartment and looking through her stuff. And it's a total disaster in there. And Abby says something like, well, rich people take things for granted. And he says, not these kinds of shoes. And he picks up this really beautiful pair of shoes. And at the on the one hand, I understood what he was trying to say. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, but those shoes have been damaged in a way that's reparable. And it's one of the only things that has been damaged. Everything else is just on the floor. But it definitely struck me that this isn't that much. She hasn't caused that much damage because she obviously just wanted the look of it being disheveled and she didn't want to actually damage her stuff. And just the little details here and there like that, that I really, really liked. So once her father goes to the hospital to see her, first of all, when they pick her up after supposedly doing the money transfer and they go to pick her up and she's looking off camera at somebody and they're afraid for her and they're, you know, Huck is like, let me go and get this guy. Let me do it. I was like, well, please just let him go and do it so he can see that there's nobody there. I just figured there was either nobody there or it was her mother, his ex-wife, and that they were going to do the reveal then. But they drew it out a little bit more. They have her in the hospital and then her dad comes to see her with flowers and she's not there because they've nailed her ass. So they have her in the office and her father says that she can either have the $20 million or she can have a clean start with her family. This scene was fucking great. I really loved this. First of all, I loved the fact that her mother said, whatever we've done to make you hate us, let us make it right. And she says, it's too late. And Olivia, to my eternal delight, said, oh, poor little rich girl. What, did they have you get babysat instead of watching you themselves? Did they miss your recitals? Did daddy work late too much? Whatever cliched bullshit you've been told by your therapist, nobody feels sorry for you. Oh, hot damn. That was fucking gorgeous. And I loved it so fucking much. And I want to marry Olivia Pope just because of that one monologue. She can drive me fucking crazy sometimes. Don't get me wrong. But damn, that was beautiful. And I loved how consistent they were that somebody who is capable of doing this when she's offered $20 million or her family, she is going to take the $20 million. I really loved the fact that they did not flinch away from making her just irredeemable in some ways. I mean, there are just people out there like that. And it just didn't surprise me at all that she decided to take the $20 million. The way that she looked at her parents, it wasn't even like they were her parents. She looked at them like they were strangers. And the reaction that Hollis has where he just says, I'll transfer it into your account tomorrow. And he says it without any hesitation whatsoever. Like to him, her making that choice, it's easier for him to say goodbye knowing how little she regards him. And then he tells her, go on, get. And he does it in this way like he's trying to get rid of like a raccoon on his front porch. I just loved it. Like, just like she's not even his kid anymore. She's just a nuisance that he's had to deal with. And now she's leaving and he just wants her gone. I thought that was great. I loved this whole scene with Hollis crying over it and Quinn seeing him crying and realizing like, yeah, he is the devil. He did a horrible thing. And everybody in the office is wondering why the hell they're representing him. But he still has to deal with the day-to-day stuff with children that everyone has to deal with. Who has children? He has to deal with the family stuff everyone has to deal with. So I'm going to move on now to David Rosen. This was weird. I'm going to straight up say, I don't know what they're doing with David. I don't know. I don't really care anymore about him. And I kind of want them to just give him something because he's in such a pathetic state right now. And I guess what I figure is going to happen is that the writers realize that David Rosen was on a high horse. He was unwilling to break the rules. He didn't want to ever do anything outside the law in order to enforce the law. And I think they want him on Olivia's side because he's really smart. But the only way to realistically get him on Olivia's side is to cut him off from every other option that he had. So I see that being the direction that he's going in. He's going to join up with Olivia Pope and Associates at some point because he can't even go home anymore. He doesn't have any money. He doesn't have a job. He's been blackballed everywhere. He's paranoid. He's being followed. He's being threatened. Joining up with her and getting a paycheck from her is literally going to be the only option he has. So that's what I'm predicting for him. But yeah, he goes back to his apartment and he opens the door. And this is what's so weird to me. Okay. He opens the door. He sees that his place has been ransacked. Now, I will never understand people who ransack in this fashion, who like take lamps and overturn them or cut open couch cushions or what exactly. They must be looking for the file that Olivia has now. But couch cushions? Really, guys? You really think that's what we're some, like, how many people just have, first of all, if you're going to hide something in a couch cushion, almost everybody is going to have couch cushions that zipper open. Check your couch cushions. I'm pretty sure they zipper open so that you can wash the covers without having to just, why do you gotta fuck shit up, guy? I understand. I really do that it's supposed to be about speed and they don't have time to unzipper shit and pull a cushion out and whatever. But it's just like, whenever there's a scene like this, it sort of reminds me of Raiders of the Lost Ark because it was so overdone. Yeah, he comes home. This place is a mess. He realizes somebody's ransacked, and then he realizes they're still there, and he hits the ground behind the couch and hides while they run out of there. It seemed like a pair of women's shoes. I kind of want to go back and rewatch that because I'm not sure. But whoever left. But the thing that I don't get here is that his door isn't soft. It made noise when he walked in, when he looked around, when he fell flat to the floor. They didn't know he was there, or maybe they just felt like, good, he can't see me, or he's not. How are you going to trust that he's not looking at you, that he didn't totally get a read on who you are? I just don't buy the fact that somebody who's in his house ransacking the place is going to hear a door open and close and a body hit the floor and then just be like, I'm out, and not actually try and cover their tracks. The only thing I can think is if it's somebody who isn't willing to cover their tracks, that they're not a professional, especially from the way this place was ransacked, and that they're not careful. So who does that leave? I don't really even fucking know. I really genuinely don't know what's going on with the storyline. So the next scene is Abby coming in and seeing him asleep on the couch and her being like, what the hell? And then they tell her that he walked in on his house being broken into, and she's suddenly all like compassionate. But he's super gross. He's got like, first of all, he wears his sweatpants all the time and they have him brushing his teeth in like the kitchen area, and Harrison being kind of like grossed out by that. And while I understand the principle of it, I do kind of agree with David, like it all goes down the same drains. Why the hell not? But at the same time, it's not like they don't have a bathroom. They have one, and you're just being kind of a dick, David. So that, I just find this really weird, the direction that they're going in with David's character and how they've just broken him down so hard. And that's the only reason I can think for them to do that. So let's move on to Osborne, shall we? Okay. So last week I said I thought it was Osborne that was the mole because he was in the level for having this kind of information, but that it seemed too easy. So I sort of wrote it off in my head. And then it turned out it was Osborne. Well, yeah, when you go back and look at everything, it doesn't really necessarily seem like Osborne is the one. Like, he never admitted anything. There was money in his dry cleaning, but that could have been planted. However, if it was planted, then why does he ask for Quinn's photo to find out who's following him? Is it just because he knows he's being followed and he doesn't actually know why, so he decides to figure that out, and that's why he goes to Olivia first instead of confronting Quinn? I don't know. There's a lot of different factors here that sort of could make it be like all of it's a coincidence and none of it's actually that he was the one responsible, because that's the question here. Yes, at the end, Jake obviously has killed Osborne and made it look like a suicide, and that's what happened with the other supposed albatross person that he tells Olivia about a few episodes ago. So yeah, it was staged. He didn't actually commit suicide, but just because he didn't commit suicide doesn't mean that he wasn't actually the person who was getting paid off and giving information. However, just going off of gut instinct, when he gets confronted, or when he confronts Cyrus and says, "You can't possibly believe that I'm actually the mole," I believed him. I really did. He seemed really upset, like just hurt more than anything that they could possibly think that of him. And I don't know. I don't necessarily think it was him. I just can't really explain the money turning up and all of that, unless there was a big, big conspiracy to make him look like the mole. People knew he was being followed and they just decided to do everything they could to make it look that way, which is certainly possible. I mean, conspiracies are conspiracies because there's tons of people involved. For him to be just this one guy who's decided to sell information to the Kashfari government, or not even the government or whatever, but to sell information, it's pretty risky to do that all by yourself without some sort of infrastructure looking out for you. So to me, the idea of him being set up by a group of other people actually makes more sense than him doing it by himself. But then there's the things like when he shows up at Livia's house and all of a sudden the cameras don't work for Jake, who's observing this whole thing, because it's easy to be like, well, Jake was the mole this whole time and that's why he killed this guy to cover his own ass. But that doesn't make any sense because Jake sees this little thumb drive that Livia hides right before Osborne shows up at her house. He doesn't seem to know what it is. He gets all weird about it and like breaks into her house. And then when he's watching Osborne show up and sees all of the cameras start to malfunction, he looks totally mystified. So it doesn't make sense to me that Jake was the mole either. And if it wasn't Jake and it wasn't Osborne, then who was it? And how do they have control of these cameras? Honestly, the first person I thought of was Cyrus, and I don't think it's Cyrus, but that's the only other person that's high level enough that made sense to me. I genuinely do not know. And I enjoyed this whole thing with Huck figuring out that Osborne knows that he and Quinn are on to him, going in a different direction, heading to Olivia's house and not going to the bank the whole time. But then Huck doesn't actually like show up at Olivia's apartment until way after Osborne is gone, which they weren't that far behind the car. It just sort of surprised me that he didn't manage to get there a little bit earlier, but I guess it really wouldn't have mattered anyway to the scene. And Olivia is obviously really freaked at the fact that Osborne gets in her face and asks, "Who hired you?" So maybe Osborne thinks that Olivia is part of the group setting him up if he really wasn't the mole. I don't know what to make of this whole thing. It's very confusing, and there's a lot of like, well, then it was so-and-so, but there's little things that sort of seem to disprove that. So I can't decide if there's just somebody that we haven't seen at all who is going to wind up being responsible later in the season, and it's something I never would have been able to guess, or if it's actually what it seems like on the surface and I'm just being really obtuse or naive or whatever. But I like that. I like how murky it is, honestly. I'm okay with it. I feel like having all of these different players and all of the different little details that disprove different things to be pretty interesting. Jake. Let's talk about little Jake over here for a second. First of all, he's so good looking. I'm sorry, males who listen to the podcast and who are not gay and so do not care whether or not Jake is hot. I will gladly, if any of you have a problem with me talking about how hot he is, I will gladly give you 20 minutes of me talking about how gorgeous Olivia Pope is. But Jesus Christ, Jake is so good looking. It's distracting to me. He's just so exactly completely my type. It's just, it bothers me. It really, frankly, it just makes me mad. And I'm just like, why do you have to be such a gray character? Because I just want to like you and you're making it so fucking difficult for me. And I know that he's still there in season 3, which makes me very happy because I just want to see his beautiful little face all the time. But what the fuck are you doing, Jake? I don't understand you. So he's watching Olivia. She drops the thumb drive, Wendy's thumb drive, into that vase so that the CIA director doesn't grab it from her. And then he calls Olivia to make sure that she's not home before he breaks in and takes the drive. And then goes and brings it to Fitz. Now, does Olivia just not notice that that drive is gone? Does she just leave it in that vase and not go back for it after the CIA director leaves? Because to me, it feels like if you are worried about somebody going after you for information and you have that information sitting right in your house and they just show up at your fucking house with no warning whatsoever and just walk into your door, maybe you don't want that information sitting in your fucking house anymore. Because David just got his house ransacked, and if they're willing to destroy the place like they were, they're obviously going to find a thumb drive in a vase. And that's not really even that hard. So why did she just leave it there? I was just kind of shocked that when Jake reached in there, it was even still there. And the fact that he takes it, he doesn't make a copy of it. He doesn't do, like, he just takes it. She's not going to notice that? That doesn't make sense. That's going to come back and bite him in the ass, right? I mean, it's got to. I don't really understand this. Anyway, so Jake is doing this sketchy stuff on his, you know, on the side, giving this information to Fitz and telling him the whole thing about that Osborne is the mole because I saw him threatening my source. Fitz is all, oh, you're not going to tell me who your source is, are you? And he's like, yeah, you're right. No, I'm fucking not, because it's the chick you're in love with and I'm also trying to bone her. So, oh, Fitz. I love when he's like, I need somebody I trust, and that's precious few lately. And I'm like, yeah, if you've been seeing him around Olivia, I'm pretty sure you'd check him off the list too. So he's doing all of this, but then he makes a date with Olivia, and she gets a call right before their date from Cyrus. And Cyrus isn't using Jake's name. And I loved this little conversation. It was just a cute moment where they're each talking about Jake, but they both say it's not someone you know, and they don't bother using his name. It seems like pretty in character to me that they both aren't trying to show too much of their cards, and both of them not using his name just makes sense. But I just really like this moment where she's in this dress, and I noticed again that she was wearing a white dress, looking in the mirror, making, like, getting ready for her date, looking really, really nervous. And I'm thinking to myself, why is she so nervous? And then when Jake shows up for the date, she's in her pajamas again. And I just really, really liked this whole bit here where she tells him, it's not that I'm necessarily even scared, it's just that if I were on a date with you, I wouldn't be on a date with you. He's in my head all the time and I can't stop thinking about him, and it's just not out of my system yet. I'm just not ready, which I respect, and I think that she's totally right. And I was kind of, now, you know, someone, if I missed this, then tell me, I kind of wanted to see Jake drop the drive back into her vase. I really did just want to see him replace it so that it would explain why she maybe won't notice it later. But maybe she will. I don't know. Maybe he would be okay with her noticing it was gone because he thought that she would assume it was Osborne or one of his people or something. In any case, this scene up until this moment where he is saying, you're afraid, and she's like, no, this other guy's in my head, I really, really liked this. But then he goes ahead and kisses her and says, are you still thinking about that other guy? Now, I have a problem with this because for me, it felt like she was very clearly being like, I'm not interested. And he's like, don't worry, baby, I'll kiss you and make you forget all about that other dude, which is like basically exactly what happened. And it sort of made me feel like a woman who's like, no, I don't date guys, I'm gay. And he's like, that's just because you haven't been with the right guy yet. Darf, darf, darf. And the fact that the kiss was so passionless to me, it just didn't feel like anything. There was no chemistry whatsoever at all, remotely. And then he pulls back and says, are you still thinking about that other guy? And she shakes her head no. I was just like, give me a fucking break. That was just so not good. It just wasn't good. We've seen kisses on this show where people's clothes are on the floor 2 seconds later. And it just, there was nothing there. I don't know. I really like Jake and I think he's super hot, but I don't really like what they're doing with him. And I feel like he's coming across as just pushy and weird and not sexy confident. He's coming across as kind of a dick, in my opinion. And I mean, we've seen that Olivia has a history of going for guys who are kind of dicks. So maybe that's fine. But I would really like to actually be on his side. And the only thing keeping me on his side right now is the fact that he's pretty. And frankly, that's going to wear a little bit thin pretty, pretty soon. So come on, writers, do better. You know, I just kind of, I like I said before, I feel like they're doing the same thing with him as they did with Edison, which is they're making him never let up and not take no for an answer and trying to turn that into something sexy or to be admired or something that a guy should do. And I think there's a point when a guy should just be respectful and be like, okay, you said no, and back the fuck off. You should back the fuck off. And I think it's TV shows like this and characters like this that make guys think that they're being charming when they don't leave you the fuck alone. And it's, you know what, guys? Unless you look like him, here's a hint, it's not charming. And even though he looks like him, it's still not charming. That is a, you just don't go down that road. Don't do it. Just don't, you know? I mean, confidence is one thing, but when you're just straight up not listening to what the woman wants, you're being an asshole, and it's not cute. So stop it. So yeah, I kind of have a problem with this whole thing. And the speech that he gives her and everything, they keep on doing this in this show with guys just professing how, well, I'm going to be, they have Edison being like, I'm not going to wait around forever, but you're wonderful, basically. And then they have him saying the same thing. I like the fact that you answer the phone and you say what? I like the fact that you always wear white and that you're consider wine to be a major food group, which I'm sure all of the fans of the show up to that point must have been cracking up, because it is just like, she's always wearing white and her whole apartment is styled in white, which I'm fine with. I think her apartment is so gorgeous. I want it. I really do. But I did enjoy that moment where he's saying all of this, but it felt very much like the writers winking at us and not like his character. So yeah, that was that with the two of them having just kind of a shitty kiss and acting like it was something great. And it obviously wasn't. It just wasn't. And I want to be on Jake's side. I really want to be on his side. And they're not helping me with that. Maybe I just need to be okay with the fact that they don't want me to be on Jake's side. It's just, you know. So later on, Jake is sitting on a park bench in some fucking park in the dark. And this guy comes up and is like, oh, it's chilly tonight, blah, blah, blah. And then we find out that this dude, Osborne, has been found in his car having supposedly committed suicide, which is exactly what happened with the other Albatross guy. And this dude, who we've never seen before, tells Jake so the police believe it. I have to say, it was staged perfectly. And Jake agrees that it went really well and that everyone buys that Osborne is the mole. And then he says, or was the mole. So I don't know what this even means. Are they trying to cover up the fact that he wasn't and just pin it on him? Was he the mole and they're just trying to end it there now that they know what he's done? Are they aware of who it actually is and they're sending a warning? Are they covering it up because they're the moles? I have no fucking clue. I really don't. Yeah. So I have no idea what's going on there. The fact that Jake actually like shot this guy and set this whole thing up is pretty intense. I didn't think that he was quite capable of that, but I should have known. And I should have known also because of the conversation between Fitz and Cyrus. So this is pretty great. Cyrus gets his information back from Charlie about how he wants to find out who Jake is. But instead of really finding out who Jake is, Charlie has figured out how Jake and Fitz know each other. And it turns out it was in the Gulf War. And he goes and confronts Fitz in his office, which was pretty fucking ballsy, and just puts down the file and is like, I know that you did shit that you can't talk about because it's just been redacted. And I know that even though you can't talk about it because some people would have a problem with it, that you're proud of it because you did what you thought was right because it needed doing, and it would jeopardize the state of the nation and maybe our democracy and republic if people knew, but you're proud of it and you did what you needed to do. And he says, I did what I needed to do. And at this point, Fitz very rightly to me is like, you can't possibly be comparing what I did to what you did. And Cyrus says, history makes the heroes and the villains. We are just players, but it's history that decides whether or not we're the good guy or the bad guy. Now, yeah, okay, fine, but I'm sorry. I don't see anything fucking heroic about what he did. I just don't. I don't see anything. He wanted his guy to get elected. If they had done anything to show us that the other dude was going to cause some sort of Armageddon in this country, then maybe I could buy this a little bit more, but I fucking don't. He wanted to have his finger in the pie. That's as simple as it gets. And there's nothing heroic about that. I'm sorry, but Cyrus, stop it. You're just fucking lying to yourself. You're lying to Fitz. You're puffing yourself up to be a hero when you're completely not. And neither is Olivia and neither is Melly. You all had your reasons for wanting something because you were going to get something out of it. It has nothing to do with being on the side of right or defending your country or anything like that. So fucking stop it. And it really made me mad. And the fact that Fitz seemed to believe it, that made me pissed off too, because it feels like if Cyrus believes it and the writers are making it so that Fitz believes it, then maybe the writers think that they're telling the truth. And I don't see that. How can they possibly even think that? But Fitz sits down with Cyrus and tells him who the mole is and the whole thing that's going on. So obviously Fitz thinks that Cyrus is right in some way. And I don't like it. And I think it's totally bullshit and I'm pissed off. And I really want someone to call him on it. And I don't know if anyone will, but this, at first when I was like thinking that Cyrus was going to say, you did stuff that you can't be that proud of that you did because you needed to, or you felt like you should, and maybe you're not proud of it, but you did it and everybody makes mistakes. If that's what he was going to do, everybody makes mistakes, nobody's perfect, please forgive me, that I would have been like, yeah, okay, cool. But he doesn't. He goes in a total other direction in this. Like, I'm proud of it and I know you're proud of what you did. And I'm like, oh, wait, what now? You're proud of it? You're proud of robbing an election. You're proud of putting somebody in office who doesn't deserve to be there. You're proud of basically invalidating the entire Constitution and democratic process of the United States. You're proud of that. Oh, good for you, Cyrus. Okay, cool. What? I just got so fucking angry. So, anyway, this whole thing with Fitz is really interesting because we have Cyrus coming in and just straight up being like, listen, I know all about your shit and I'm going to tell you all about your shit and explain to you why you need to chill the fuck out. And then Melly comes in and basically does the same thing. So this was interesting because I couldn't figure it out. Melly's trying to get this whole visit with their kids postponed or having him be too busy to do it. And I'm like, what exactly is her game here? Because, you know, every other episode she's been trying desperately to get on Fitz's good side. And I didn't see how any of these would accomplish that. And then when she gets in this argument with Fitz, oh my God, this was so gorgeous. She just blurts out they didn't want to come. And I suddenly was like, oh my God, it all makes total sense. And you see Fitz like, oh, come on, you think I'm going to believe that? And she's like, yeah, you know why? Because you're a drunk. And that's what she just fucking said. You have become your father. You're mean. The last time they came down, you know that they hate playing tennis, and all you did was make them play tennis and criticize. Your son is afraid of you. Your daughter is miserable. They don't want to see you because you're acting like a different person. You're not their father anymore. And then she goes on to say, and you know why? It's because you found out that your beloved goddess mistress isn't, what is it she says? She doesn't have all of the answers to the mysteries of the universe tucked between her thighs. You found out that she is a person just like everyone else. Oh, God bless you, Melly. Melly, marry me. Just marry me. I promise that I would appreciate you, Melly. You're so wonderful. I just loved this whole monologue so fucking much, and her throwing it in his face that you have become your father, and I want you to think about that because I know how much you hated your father. And think about the fact that your children feel that way about you right now because of you constantly being soaked in scotch. And then ends it with, so deal with it. Your children didn't want to come. So pour another scotch on top of that and deal with it. And then leaves. Oh, snippety fucking snap. That was so awesome. That was so awesome. I loved it so much. I just did. It was just, I don't know if it's actually going to do anything. We see him pull away from the glass of scotch on the desk. But, you know, somebody can say no to a glass of scotch or a piece of cake in my case and then eat an entire cake the next day. One time doesn't mean anything. So I don't really know what to anticipate with what's going on with Fitz. If he's actually going to clean up his act and if he actually heard her, is he going to go sober? Is he going to be a miserable fuck because he's going sober and he's going into withdrawals? I want to know. And I just love Melly so fucking much. I really do. She can do stupid shit sometimes, but most of the time she's pretty great. And Fitz is such a dick. He really is such a dick so much of the time. It's interesting because I was saying before how Jake is kind of a dick, and we've seen that Olivia goes for guys who are like that a lot of the time. But she, on the phone with Cyrus, says, I don't really think I even know this person, when she's talking about Jake. And she says, that's kind of strange. I don't know what's going on with that exactly. So she can tell something's up with him, but she doesn't know what it is, and she's not making that much of an effort to find out. And I find that kind of surprising. I guess there's been a lot going on with her, but still, I feel like if I were somebody who had Olivia's job, the first thing I would do if I liked a guy was do a background check on him, because that seems to be how she rolls. I've never really been the type to be suspicious of people on the outset. I can be cynical, but I tend to give people the benefit of the doubt a lot of the time in real life. Not on television, because obviously we're looking for drama there. So I definitely am more suspicious of people on TV and stuff. But in real life, I don't do that. I feel like I haven't been dating during this whole period when the internet has really been a bigger thing and it's been a lot easier to find out stuff about people. And if I had been, I would have totally been scouring the internet for things on like Facebook or whatever. With her power that she has, doing a background check and finding out all kinds of other things seems just totally reasonable. She's got Cyrus on her side and he cares about her well-being, and I'm pretty sure she could just give him a call and be like, find out about this dude that I'm dating, and he'd be like, okay, cool, I'll do that. Anyway, that's the end of the episode. I hope that you guys enjoyed. I had a lot of fun. I really liked this one a lot, and I'm interested to see what is going to go on with Fitz next and what the fuck Jake is doing. I don't know what the hell's going on with him. And I really hope that Huck isn't falling in love with Quinn and that they don't try to make a couple out of them, because that'll be super weird and creepy. And I guess that's about it. So come to facebook.com/unspoiledpod. You can follow me on Twitter @unspoiledshow or me personally @NatashaWriting. And I want to let you guys know also that I have been invited to write a short erotic story for a Halloween themed compilation that's going to be coming out October 15th, I believe is the release date. And it's called All Hallows Erotica. I think there is 9 writers in total. So there's 7 others are all contributing to this anthology, and I'm really excited about it. They're all going to be Halloween themed, and it's the first time I've been involved in a project like this, so I'm pretty excited about it. So if you want to pre-order on Amazon, I believe it's $2.99. I'm going to have to double check on that. I should know the price, but this is the first night that I have found out that it was on pre-order. But it is called All Hallows Erotica on Amazon, available for pre-order. Check it out. And yeah, I thank you guys so much for listening. And I will see you again later this week with a new episode.